I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames.
Good afternoon. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Delighted and honored to have you with me and my spectacular producer. His name is Brian. Together, we're going to be with you for the next 2 hours. That's right, 2 hours here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I am not Maggie Dawn. You figured that out already. My name is Jim Santel. I also have a broadcast that happens on Saturday mornings here on many of the stations of Civic Media. It's called Amicus, a law review. We spend a lot of time talking about civics and government and things like voting and elections, which also brings us to the subject matter of this afternoon's show here on the Maggie Dawn Broadcast Show. Delighted once again to have you joining me and Brian, all of you together. We come together on this Monday afternoon after dramatic, huge news on the political landscape of America just breaking over this past weekend. Brian knows all about it, I know all about it, and you know all about it as well. And that is a decision by our current president, Joseph R. Biden, not to pursue his candidacy further for the presidency of the United States of America, effectively meaning that he will be a one-term president. But what a one-term it has been, and it continues to be. It is not over. He is still the president of the United States of America until 11:59, maybe even noon, on January 20th of 2025. Many more things that he wants to do, he wants to accomplish on behalf of his own legacy, but most importantly, on behalf of the people of the United States of America, including right here in Wisconsin and other places throughout our great nation. He, of course, has been joined in this effort to try to make America better, brighter, and more wonderful nation for the past 3.5 years by his colleague, his vice president. He selected her. Her name, of course, is Kamala Harris. She used to be the attorney general of the state of California, became a senator in the United States Senate, the United States Congress, where Joe Biden also came from after an equally illustrious career, and then selected by Joe Biden to be his running mate in the 2020 election. You know well the history that followed from that. They go on to defeat. Yes, indeed, they did defeat Donald Trump for the presidency in 2020. Courts have said that. All of the reporting on that is accurate. There has been no fraud in the 2020 election. And now we look forward in the wake of almost the conclusion of the Biden presidency and all of the terrific things that Joe Biden has accomplished for all of us. We look forward to the imminent, almost certain nomination of Kamala Harris as the Democratic nominee for the presidency going forward just 105 days from now. The election coming up in 105 days here in Wisconsin and throughout every other state and territory of our nation, the presidency of the United States of America online. And so it is very fitting today that we not only talk about this major news event in American history, it is an historic event, not only for a president to make the decision, an incumbent president who could indeed have a second term in office, to make the decision not to continue with the presidency and instead be recognized by the American public for accomplishments during this fantastic term, many, many things, and also continue, if Americans choose to do so, which they should, continue with that legacy into the next 4 and perhaps even years beyond that. And so today we're going to be talking a lot, not only about what Maggie has called for many of these recent broadcasts, the Joe Biden Top 100, the things that he means, the things that he incorporates, the things that are all part of his campaign up to this point. And now, with some permission from my good friend and colleague, Maggie, who is away today and asking me to stand in her place, to sit in her all-important chair here for the Maggie Dawn Show, I'm going to take the liberty of amending that title to talk about the Joe Biden Kamala Harris Top 100, because in fact, they're together on this, And she not only inherits the legacy of Joe Biden, but she continues all of those things that Maggie and her guests have talked about in these recent weeks and that we're going to talk about today here for the next 2 hours, including you on this broadcast station of Civic Media. Specifically, we are going to talk about that all-important thing called voting in America. Voting in Wisconsin, voting in every state and every territory in these United States of America. An assignment given to me by Maggie. She may not have known about the major news event of this past week when she, a number of weeks ago, asked me to sit in for her. But the reality is that her timing, as always, is perfect because, again, we get this wonderful opportunity not only to revel in this major news story, not just political, not just governmental, but civics on behalf of all of us that happened this past week, and the almost certain assumption by Kamala Harris of the nomination for the presidency by the Democratic Party. I'm going to talk about the mechanisms of voting here in Wisconsin, some significant things that have happened fairly recently, just a couple of weeks ago, that are going to happen, that are going to impact the election coming up on August 13th. That's the primary election. And then, of course, the major election, the big election coming up on November 5th. That's the one coming up in 105 days from now. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what the Supreme Court of the state of Wisconsin did just about 2 weeks ago that changes once again the ways in which we can and should vote in this, our state of Wisconsin. We're going to talk then about the history of voting in America, including right here in Wisconsin. We're going to be superficial necessarily in providing you what is probably the subject of semesters of study in our academic institutions, certainly in law schools around the country, a brief voting rights history that brings us up to the Supreme Court once again, this time the federal Supreme Court. We're going to talk about two major cases from recent years and not so recent years in which the Supreme Court has variously affirmed the thing called the Voting Rights Act of 1965, this major piece of legislation that changed forever the course of voting that's going to affect the process that we're going to be pursuing on August 13th and again November 5th right here in Wisconsin and beyond. We're going to talk about the Voting Rights Act of 1965 signed by Lyndon Johnson. Interestingly, another president who, while he could have served, while he could have run for another term, announced to the nation on a major broadcast from the Oval Office that he was not going to seek a second term, much as Joe Biden has done just this past week. There is precedent for this. We're going to talk about what the connections are between the Biden decision, the Johnson administration, and in particular, the things that tie them together, which is all about voting, voting rights, voting history, and the inheritance that we have had from the Lyndon Johnson era that began under the Kennedy term, continued throughout administrations, both Republican and Democratic, both since that time. We're going to talk about all of that, and then we're going to talk about the United States Supreme Court, a couple of cases. You probably know them well. They are now ensconced in our history as well as blots on our voting rights history. One of them is called Shelby County versus Holder. Yes, that's Eric Holder, my former boss when I was a U.S. attorney, a case that changed the way that the Voting Rights Act could be implemented. We'll chat all about that. We're going to talk about another case years later called Brnovich versus Democratic National Committee, a second case in which our Supreme Court further rolled back the protections established by the legislature, by Lyndon Johnson way back in 1965 to establish voting rights for all people. We'll talk about those major Supreme Court cases. And then, as an important part of our discussion this afternoon on the Maggie Dawn Show, yes, we're going to end on something positive, not only the anticipated nomination of Kamala Harris, the things that she can work on during a first term for a Harris administration that have to do with the restoration of your voting rights under the Voting Rights Act. We're going to talk about something called the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. It's had various labels, various names over the course of the past several years, always introduced into the Congress, always introduced in the House of Representatives and in the United States Senate. It never passes. Why? Because there is not the political will, there's not the political support on behalf principally of Republicans in those two houses to pass the legislation that would do what are called fixes, corrections to this Shelby County case. a fix to the Brnovich case. It would restore what President Lyndon Johnson and the Congress in 1965 established for voters of all colors and races and abilities and disabilities and faiths and religions and national origins and familial statuses and sexual orientations and gender identities, all immutable characteristics protected by the Voting Rights Act of 1965, but rescinded in some significant operational ways by our Supreme Court. What is it that Kamala Harris, as a part of the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris top 100, also a part of her agenda as she goes forward and almost certainly assumes the nomination, what is on now her agenda of what we're now calling here the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris top 100? We're going to talk all about voting rights, the things that we all embrace as key to all of the other issues, everything else in the area of civil rights, human rights, privacy rights, commerce, education, healthcare, travel, arts, all the things that are meaningful to us, all of those things derive from voting. Where do we get presidents and vice presidents and members of Congress? Where do we get Supreme Court justices, both at the state level and the federal level? They all come to us how? Through voting. We know that. We know that well. And that is why on this day, when we recognize for the first time here on the Maggie Dawn Show, this major news event, Kamala Harris becoming almost certainly the nominee for the presidency, embracing this notion of voting rights, restoration of voting rights, compromised as we go forward here this afternoon, inviting your participation here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Telling these tears go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flame. Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
I did what I came to do.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel. I am sitting in, standing in today for Maggie, at her request, to talk with you all about voting rights in America. How do we vote? What are the circumstances of that? Where did this concept come from? What are its legislative bases? What has the Supreme Court done in the state of Wisconsin recently to encourage voting in the August 13th election, the November 5th election? What has our federal Supreme Court done in recent years to compromise some of those basic enforcement opportunities and options by the U.S. Department of Justice? And yes, as a part of the day in which we celebrate the Joe Biden and Kamala Harris top 100 here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, we are going to talk about the legislative remedies that are available right now to this Congress, to this president, as he continues the legacy that he has established for these past 3.5 years. The Congress at any time could seize upon these so-called fixes to these Supreme Court cases. Kamala Harris will now inherit that mission, that decree, if you will, from all of us who are interested in and supportive of voting rights. That is going to be a part of her legacy as she not only accepts the nomination of the Democratic Party in Chicago in just a few short weeks, and then goes on to campaign and becomes the next president of the United States of America. Based upon what? Based upon voting, an all-important aspect of our very civics in this nation, key to the Constitution of our United States of America. We celebrate today, we observe today this major event in American history in which the current president, Joseph Biden, has indicated he is suspending his campaign for the presidency, and it appears on this afternoon. when all of the news is breaking and all of the support is coming in for Kamala Harris, that there do not appear to be other members of the Democratic Party, many of them whose names we know well, who are going to be challenging her. And so an awful lot of unity from federal legislators, from federal officers, from state officials, governors, state assembly people, state senators, all kinds of folks up and down in counties and municipalities around the country lining up to support Kamala Harris. The issue, of course, is going to be the nomination, which will almost certainly be hers in Chicago. And again, we go down this path again of her selection for a running mate. That will be one of the next major issues as the Joe Biden presidency begins to come to an end. Not over yet, not by a long shot. Many more things to do. And yet this transition from the Joe Biden presidency to, on January 20th of 2025, a Kamala Harris presidency. Today, we anticipate that, and we're talking all about voting rights. Brian, I understand that we've got some media, we've got some reporting from Kamala on the South Lawn of the White House just today, in which she talked about the future of our nation, and perhaps even about the imposition of all of us, the requirement upon all of us to vote. We have that tape, Brian?
Yeah, these are a couple lines from Kamala. She was talking about Joe Biden and his legacy. She really didn't do much campaigning per se. She was doing an appearance as the vice president. Just wanted to make that clear.
Very good. Let's hear from Kamala Harris.
I am firsthand witness that every day our president Joe Biden fights for the American people, and we are deeply, deeply grateful for his service to our nation. In one term, he has already surpassed the legacy of most presidents who have served two terms in office. Joe Biden's legacy of accomplishment over the past 3 years is unmatched in modern history. The qualities that Beau revered in his father are the same qualities that I have seen every day in our president. His honesty, his integrity, his commitment to his faith and his family, his big heart, and his love, deep love of our country.
There we have it. That is Kamala Harris. She is the Vice President of the United States of America, and she is talking from the White House today, not as the president. That president, as we know, that is Joseph Biden. She is talking about him and that legacy. That legacy does conclude, as we are going to review today on the Maggie Dawn Show, a legacy hugely supportive of voting rights in America, this threshold thing that all Americans can and should do, regardless of political party, the importance of voting, the tragedy, the things that happen, the consequences which are not good if we don't vote, if we don't go to the polls and express what James Madison talked about, what the founders incorporated into our Constitution, this fundamental notion to be the authors of our own government, our own democracy, our own republic. That's what Kamala Harris is talking about. The legacy established by Joe Biden, I would add, not just as a president, but as you know, 50 years of service to the United States of America, one of the youngest members of Congress ever elected, and for many of those years in the United States Senate representing Delaware, on the Senate Judiciary Committee, presiding over hearings that resulted in the reviews and confirmations of Supreme Court justices, taking care of a lot of things inside that assignment that have to do with voting rights. We're going to talk near the end of our two-hour time together today about Joe Biden's continuing commitment, the things that he has articulated not only in his campaign, now suspended, but even before he announced his candidacy, the things that have been a part of his administration that are now almost certainly going to be a part of the Harris administration, the Harris campaign going forward. Why? Because it makes sense. It's a part of America. It is what ensures the future of our nation. So let us begin. And again, as always, inviting your questions, your inquiries along the way as we talk today in observance of this major event in American history. Talk today about the future, not just here in Wisconsin, but throughout our nation. August 13th, a primary election here, and November 5th, the general election. That election right here in the state of Wisconsin also affected by a decision made just recently, a couple of weeks ago, that ballot drop boxes here in our state of Wisconsin can once again be used widely throughout our state. You may recall that this would rescind, turn back a ruling that was issued about 2 years ago by the same Supreme Court. At that time, a different kind of majority. Drop boxes, as we know, used in Wisconsin for years and years as one of the several ways, the approachable ways, the reasonably accessible ways in which we can vote, along with things like early in-person voting, mail-in voting, all those things to ensure that the franchise, the capacity to vote, is extended to as many people as possible. The widespread use of drop boxes in 2020, you remember that year not so long ago, that was during the year and the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic that changed our lives forever and certainly changed the ways in which we vote in the state of Wisconsin and, yes, throughout our nation, frankly, throughout the world. It drew, when the drop boxes were first used at that time, an awful lot of attention about whether or not that's the appropriate way to do it. And we're going to talk more about what happened then and what happened recently having to do with drop boxes as we talk today about elections and voting here on The Maggie Dawn Show.
Have at it.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Thank you for joining me and my terrific producer, Brian, as we talk today for this hour and, yes, next hour as well about what we have now renamed the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris Top 100, those top issues, those advocacies that have animated this administration and will almost certainly also animate the next administration, a Harris presidency. Talking about elections, talking about voting, the franchise that is guaranteed to us not only by the Constitution, but also by statutes. We're going to talk about all of that today, focusing initially here upon this major decision issued by our Supreme Court that reversed an earlier decision of about a couple of years or so ago in which the Supreme Court had said that drop boxes cannot be used as a way of ensuring votes and the collection and actually the counting of votes. That decision forbidding the use of drop boxes in the state of Wisconsin overturned in early July. The decision by the state Supreme Court, our Wisconsin Supreme Court, doesn't mandate that the clerks who are in charge of our elections use those boxes. But Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, who writes the opinion for the majority, which is the rule of law now in this case, writes for this four-justice majority, says this: the law now acknowledges what Wisconsin law has always meant, she writes, that clerks may in fact lawfully use secure drop boxes in an exercise of their statutorily conferred discretion. In other words, the legislature gives them the option to do that, not compelled to do it, but in the exercise of their discretion, which the clerks have. That concept, by the way, also incorporated in our federal constitution as well, when it says that the terms and conditions and the circumstances of voting, those are left to the states. They are further delegated to the clerks around our state. Why? Because we've got different regions, we've got different counties and different municipalities around our state. And each one of them should abide by the law, but also in a way that makes sense and makes operational integrity a part of the voting system. And so what Ann Walsh Bradley says is not compelled to use them, but if it makes sense in your particular area to use drop boxes, you can do just that, reversing reversing what the Wisconsin Supreme Court had said a couple of years ago. Now, on the opposite side, the minority, Justice Rebecca Bradley, she disagreed with that. She wrote in a dissent, "The majority again forsakes the rule of law," she says, "in an attempt to advance its political agenda." Now, all of this is very important, of course, because it enables us to access and use properly and effectively and fairly and decently another mechanism that ensures the right to vote and access to having your vote here in the state of Wisconsin counted. Indeed, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have talked about these kinds of things as well. They have made that a part of their, not only their legacy to this point, but also their commission to the future. Our governor today, Tony Evers, also has called that Dropbox ruling a victory for our democracy. He said, "We're going to keep fighting to ensure that every eligible voter can cast their ballot safely and securely and as easily as possible." The mayor of Madison, Satya Rhodes Conway, also praised that ruling. Again, consistent with what Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have said about this, she said, "I'm so pleased that common sense has prevailed and that Wisconsin now has a high court interested in expanding voting rights rather than restricting them." That has been also the commission, the adopted vision and mission of the Biden administration, the Harris administration, as we go forward today and talk about voting rights in America. I promised you as well that we would give you a bit of a short history, a necessarily superficial history of voting rights in America, because it's important to understand where we have been, to understand and appreciate not only where the Wisconsin Supreme Court case comes in, but also what happens in America as the Voting Rights Act is passed, constitutional amendments are passed, Supreme Court decisions begin to roll some of that back, and then ultimately, as we're going to get into our second hour, mechanisms for restoring those things that regrettably our Supreme Court has turned back on. Challenges to voting rights in the country of the sort that we have seen recently here in the state of Wisconsin, other places throughout our nation, regrettably, are not new. They're not a 21st century invention at all. There have long been groups out there who have tried to keep the vote, the franchise, outside of the hands of the less powerful. America actually began its very great tradition, this great democratic experiment in democracy, voting rights, in the late 1700s by granting the right to vote to a very narrow subset of society at that time. We know who those people are. They're white males who held land, right? That's how it was, as our country was formed. And thankfully, the story that you're about to hear, that you know well from your civics class, from your history class, has for the most part been a movement away from that, a further expansion beyond that. But even as barriers to voting began receding in the ensuing decades, many southern states continued to try to restrict the franchise. We're going to talk about that as well. Over time, voting rights indeed in America became a bipartisan priority. People on all sides of the political aisle, a time in this country, Republicans, Democrats, in between, all sorts of people supported the notion that when you vote and you encourage people to exercise the franchise, our nation is stronger. The landmark Voting Rights Act of 1965, which we're going to talk about, passed by Congress, not a unanimous Congress, but a bipartisan Congress, 1965. We had that in America not that long ago, took major steps to curtail voter suppression, attempts to limit the right to vote here in the state of Wisconsin and other places. It began a new era of voting rights in America that also included some pushing and pulling with the voting rights of very, very many Americans being expanded over time, and also attempts to try to restrict that by various other groups. Voting age reduced, for example, from 18 to 21. The extension of the franchise about 100 years ago to women for the first time in our nation, ensuring that people have of all races and ethnicities and genders and disabilities and sexual orientations, ages, all other immutable factors also have access to the voting rights. People of language minorities also a part of that movement toward a greater understanding of voting in America. Let's begin by talking about where this all begins. The U.S. Constitution, originally, as we know, leaves it to the states to determine who is qualified to vote in elections. That's in our Constitution. Now, that changes over time. with changes in our Constitution. But we also know that that's how our Constitution begins. And for decades, state legislatures in this country generally restricted, they limited voting to white males who owned property. That was the standard at the start of our country. Some states early on also employed religious tests that ensured or tried to ensure that only Christians and only Christian men and only white Christian men could vote. During the latter part, the early part of the 19th century, some legislatures began to limit the property requirement for voting, basically saying, well, gee, property shouldn't be a condition for voting, and it shouldn't. And later during the Reconstruction period, also following the Civil War, you know that well, some of these official barriers that began our nation, they began to recede. They began to fall away. Congress passed the 15th Amendment to the Constitution. You know that well, the 15th Amendment to the Constitution, which ensured that people could not be denied the right to vote because of their race. Post-Civil War major amendment, one of three, actually more that followed in that time period, expanding the franchise in America. The amendment ratified by all the states in 1870. But in the decades that followed, in the wake of that, this extension of the right to vote to people of all races, particularly in the South, began to see an increase in attempts to raise barriers to that, like poll taxes and literacy tests. Again, inside the specific parameters of the 15th Amendment, but things that, states were adding on to prevent people who are not wealthy, who could not read and write, who should be, and under our Constitution, should be entitled to vote, attempts by those states to try to limit that as well. Early in the 20th century, as I also indicated, in the 20th century, as late as the 20th century, women were still only able to vote in a handful of states. That's stunning. That's stunning, right? And only after decades of organizing and activism and advocacy by principally women, but also joined by an awful lot of well-minded and decent and forward-looking men, coalition in this country, women nationwide eventually win the right to vote with the ratification of what the 19th Amendment to the Constitution. That happens in 1920, not all that long ago, about 100 years or so ago. Finally, women win the right to vote as well. The struggle for equal voting rights access comes to a head. Again, skipping over a lot of history. There's a huge amount of development. Again, in this time period, it's all moving forward. It's expanding, which has been the story of our history of our nation. Expanding rights, civil rights, human rights in all areas, including rights to vote. 1960s, many states, particularly in the South, dug in on some of these policies, like literacy tests, putting up the bar to voting if you cannot read and write, poll taxes, requiring you to pay a tax, money. You have to pay money before you can come and vote. Can you imagine that? English language requirements also established by states in this country, and more also aimed at suppressing the votes, principally among people of color, but also, of course, immigrants and low-income populations. All of that happens even in the 1960s. That's happening. March of 1965. You remember this well from the history books, if not from your own recollection. Many of us were alive at that time. Activists organizing protests about this very issue. This is Martin Luther King Jr. This is Coretta Scott King. Selma, Alabama, marching from the state capital of Montgomery to spotlight this issue of voting rights in America, black voting rights in particular, but all of these attempts to try to limit the franchise at that time. The first march, as again you recall from your history books, brutal, attacked by police who were sent out there by government to try to put this down. And that, of course, known as Bloody Sunday, a horrific day. After a second march was cut short, a throng of thousands finally made this journey from Selma, Alabama to Montgomery on March 24th, drawing attention to this nationwide issue of voting and rights in America. 1964, the 24th Amendment targets poll taxes. Finally, in 1964, as late as that time, the United States Constitution finally establishes that poll taxes are not constitutional, cannot do them. They were undeniably a particularly egregious form of suppression. For the century following the Civil Rights War, as I indicated, an awful lot of invocations of that to keep people from voting who did not have the economic capacity to do so. Payment of the tax, believe it or not, in this country was a prerequisite for voter registration. In many states, taxes were expressly designed to keep African-American populations and low-income white people from voting. Some states even enacted grandfather clauses to allow many higher-income white people to avoid paying the tax, believe it or not. Discrimination, even that. The 24th Amendment, again, approved by the Congress 1962 and ratified the states 2 years later, kicks that out. 1966, as late as 1966, our Supreme Court rules that poll taxes are unconstitutional, following up upon the constitutional amendment itself, unconstitutional in any state in any United States election. And then we have the Voting Rights Act of 1965. As the Maggie Dawn Show continues this afternoon, we're going to talk more about this major landmark legislation, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, what it did to further enforce the franchise in America.
Be my first choice, that I can tell you.
He needs to go back to where he came from.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie Dawn today and talking all about the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris top 100 issues advocacies, including voting in America, part of their administration, past, present, and future as well. Talking about this major civil rights legislation in 1965, inspired by those marches in Alabama. Earlier that year, Congress passes the Voting Rights Act. And take a look, get a listen to this. The vote was decisive and it was bipartisan in 1965. 79-18 is the vote in the United States Senate, 328-74 in the House of Representatives. Imagine a majority like that today, difficult to imagine. President Lyndon Johnson, again, takes this cudgel up from John Kennedy, who also described this as a part of his anticipated legacy, if his presidency had not been cut so tragically short. Lyndon Johnson takes that up and signs this measure after Congress passes it on August 6th. He does it in the White House. He does it there at a time when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, other icons of the civil rights movement are there at his side. August 6th of 1965. What does it do? It is huge. It provides an awful lot of protections, incorporates many of those things previously established in the Constitution by statute, but also affirms them legislatively for all to know and all to consume. Many of the policies and practices that states have been using to limit voting among blacks, African Americans, and other targeted groups, including people of low income, including people who do not speak the English language, other rights targeted to keep them from voting, the Voting Rights Act prevented that from going forward, including provisions that required states and local jurisdictions, this is very important, with an historical pattern of suppressing voting rights based on race, to submit any of their proposed changes going forward, anything they want to change in their laws before you can do that, those places where you've got a history of voting rights discrimination, you have to have those laws passed by, reviewed by, the United States Department of Justice, the voting rights section at Maine Justice. You got to get permission from the Department of Justice before you can enact things. That's what's called the preclearance provision of the Voting Rights Act. Keep that in mind, because we're going to talk about what the Supreme Court did to that in a decision called Shelby County. The ensuing decades, the preclearance provision basically provides a remarkably, stunningly effective way of discouraging state and local officials from erecting new barriers to voting, stopping some of these egregious policies that we've seen in other places from going forward, and providing communities and civil rights advocacies across the board advance notice of changes that might suppress the vote, ensuring that this tradition that we have of expanding the vote continues. And indeed it does. We're going to get back to the Voting Rights Act in a little while. 1971, young people win the right to vote. For much of the nation's history, the states generally restricted voting to people aged 21 and older. During the 1960s, that same civil rights movement, commending, encouraging a lower voting age, gaining steam, especially among student populations, the war in Vietnam, which fought largely, as we know, by young 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, all of those draftees. The 26th Amendment prohibits states and the federal government then from using age as a reason to deny the vote to anyone who is 18 years of age or over. Age is now restricted in terms of those kinds of things that a state might do to try to disenfranchise people. The right to vote is expanded to people who are young. 1975, the Voting Rights Act is expanded to protect language minorities, adding new provisions to the Voting Rights Act to protect members of language minority groups. The amendments require jurisdictions with major significant groups of voters in their communities who have limited or no proficiency in English to do what? To provide some voting materials, some explanatory materials about what's going on. Provide voting materials in other languages other than English, and to provide multilingual assistance at the polls. Multilingual assistance, that's compelled by a 1975 amendment to the Voting Rights Act. In 1982, Congress again enforces and advances and amends the Voting Rights Act, this time requiring new voting protections for people with disabilities. Passing, this is this law, extending the Voting Rights Act 1982 for another 25 years, re-upping it, ensuring that it does not go away. And as a part of that extension, members of Congress, again, not with unanimity, but with overwhelming bipartisan support, require states to take steps, actions, specific practical things that should be done to make voting more accessible for the elderly and for people with disabilities. Again, moving along in the right direction. 1993, the motor voter aspect becomes law. Responding once again to historically low rates in voter registration, Congress passed the National Voter Registration Act, sometimes called the Motor Voter Law. The law requires what? It requires states to allow citizens to register to vote when they apply for their driver's licenses. Makes sense, right? The law also required states to offer mail-in registration to allow people to register to vote at offices offering public assistance of various kinds. All of that a part of the 1993 extension, the amendment of the Voting Rights Act. The first year of its implementation, get this, more than 30 million people. 30 million people completed their voter registration applications or updated their registration through means made available because of the motor voter law. Now, we know what happens in 2000 and in the years following, in the couple of decades in this century in particular. Comes in the wake of the Bush-Gore presidential election, the issues about counting and recounting specifically in the state of Florida, an awful lot of issues about the legitimacy of voting machines and those kinds of things. 2002, Congress passes the Help America Vote Act. With memories of that 2000 election, concerns about voting stopping and starting and hanging chads, if those of you remember that, reviews by people to determine whether or not who won that election. And actually, it turns out, of course, that Al Gore won that election. George Bush ran to the presidency. All of that consumed in the Help America Vote Act in 2002, the goal of streamlining election procedures across the nation. New mandates on states and localities to replace some of that outdated voting equipment, new registration lists, provisional ballots, all kinds of things also encouraging voting by people with disabilities and other aspects of that. As we continue in the Maggie Dawn Show, more of this history of voting rights and an affirmation once again of the Biden-Harris top 100 when it comes to voting in the United States of America.
First of all, let me just make the statement very clear. I believe we need to legalize marijuana.